say video on my phone, when Paris stuck her head in the room.
Get dressed. I'm bored. I can't take it anymore. We're going out. We're leaving in 30 minutes.
She didn't have to tell me twice. Of course I was bored, considering my damn meddling mother had basically made Uncle Elsie put me on lockdown instead of sending me out on jobs. I jumped off the bed and walked over to my 10x10 walk-in closet. Where we going? 'Cause you know I ain't got shit to wear.
I know, right? Paris agreed. Same here, but find something. We ain't got time to go shopping.
All right. But are you gonna tell me where we going, or what? I need to know what style to wear.
Wear something expensive. We are going to a charity event, she said, sounding very proper and high society.
A charity event? I whined. I hated charity events. They were more boring than sitting around the house looking at everyone's long faces about the warehouse being blown up in Atlanta and Uncle Larry's recent killing spree.
What kind of charity event? You know I hate these things, Paris. Sasha, stop it with all the damn bitching and moaning. Trust me on this. You're gonna have fun, she said with a confident smile. Now get dressed. I'm serious about leaving in half an hour.
An hour later, we pulled into Jake's 58 Hotel and Casino out in Long Island. At first, I thought Paris might have been lying about it being a charity event. But sure enough, the sign in the front lobby read, Ladies Night Out, Benefit Auction. We were directed to one of the casino hotel banquet halls, which was set up for a fashion show, complete with a runway and a small stage. The audience was an eclectic group of women, all ages, dressed in everything from Sunday's best to high fashion couture. Now, I love fashion, but the vibe in this place was way too low-key for me. I needed more excitement than these bougie ladies could ever offer. Paris, the last place I want to be is a boring-ass fashion show. I could have stayed home and watched Project Runway reruns for this.
Trust me, it's going to be fun.
Paris shrugged and handed me a glass of champagne from the bar before we made our way to the seat she had reserved in the VIP section. How much fun can a charity auction be, Paris? I asked as we settled into our seats. Before she could answer, the lights dimmed and the intro to R. Kelly's 12 play came blasting out of nowhere. Women began screaming, which totally confused me. This was like no fashion show I'd ever been to. Then I looked toward the stage, and everything made sense. One by one, some of the finest men I had ever laid eyes on began strolling out, each wearing jeans, Timberland boots, and nothing else. Their muscular chests and shoulders glistened as they gyrated to the beat of the music. The group of men were just as varied as the women in the audience, all races and ages. But there was one thing they all had in common. They were all fine as fuck. My eyes widened, and I drank my champagne in one gulp.
Yes!
Paris jumped up and screamed along with the rest of the women, and I couldn't help laughing. One of the men dove onto the floor in front of us and proceeded to demonstrate his stroke game. My mouth gaped open. He had the body of a Nubian king and the face of a model. Watching him dance in front of me, I could only imagine what he would do to me in bed. As the song ended, he slowly stood up, and our eyes met. He smiled at me, and I almost forgot where I was. In one leap, he was back on the runway stage, and then he disappeared behind the curtain along with the other guys.
Ladies, ladies, ladies! What's going on?
A woman yelled into the microphone. As she walked on stage, I recognized her as a reality star turned rapper whose song had been number one on the charts. The audience went wild.
Is that?
Yep, I told you it was gonna be fun.
Paris nudged me playfully.
Welcome to the Ladies Night Out Benefit Auction. I can already see that the show's opening got y'all excited as hell, right? Y'all like those fellas, huh?
The host held her microphone toward the audience, and we all screamed.
So that means that y'all are ready to show them some love and bid on them. Because tonight, each and every one of their fine asses are up for auction. Get those wallets ready, ladies.
Oh, shit.
I turned and looked at Paris. That's what the hell they're auctioning off?
Yep.
Paris smirked. And I got my eyes set on one or two. What about you?
A smile spread across my face because I knew exactly who I would be bidding on.
All right, ladies, the announcer said. First up for grabs, we have Victor, who also happens to be a volunteer firefighter right up the road in Huntington.
A sexy white guy wearing a fire hat and suspenders walked out and stood in front of the microphone.
Hey, ladies, I'm Victor, and I'm ready to come put out the fire of the hottest bidder tonight.
$400!
A woman sitting beside Paris yelled out.
$450!
Another one yelled.
The bidding for Victor continued until it reached $2,000, and the winner ran on stage and gave him a big hug. Victor didn't seem to mind that she looked more like a lukewarm grandma instead of the hottie he talked about, because he picked her up into his arms and carried her off stage. The crowd went wild, clamoring for the next specimen to be brought on stage. We all laughed and screamed as each guy came out and explained why we should bid on him. Some, like Victor, went for $2,000. A few went for slightly higher, but most of them stayed at around $1,200.
Are you going to bid?
I leaned over and asked Paris, who was staring intensely at the gorgeous, deep chocolate guy who had just walked on stage, wearing a chef's hat and carrying a spatula.
Hey, ladies, I'm Bilal, and I'm a private chef who would love to whip something up for you to taste, he said.
Nah, not this one, Paris said, although she continued staring and smiling at him.
Why not? You're damn near drooling at his ass, I told her.
Because I've already fucked him for free.
She looked over at me and laughed.
I couldn't help it. I laughed right along with her.
You know I gotta ask, I said. And I have no problem telling you. Yes, he can cook his ass off, she said, trying to keep a straight face.
I shook my head. You're silly ass. You know that's not what I want to know. I want to know if he can fuck.
Oh, I would definitely fuck him again, she replied happily. He's a three-tool player and proficient at them all. Fingers, tongue, and dick, we chanted in unison, then high-fived each other.
Paris finally caught his eye, placing her hand to her ear and mouthing the words, "Call me." He nodded his head, then went back to working the rest of the crowd. I was waiting in anticipation for the sexy guy I had mentally staked my claim on during the show's opening. Finally, he walked out wearing a stethoscope.
"What's up, ladies? I'm Dennis. I'm a doctor from Dix Hills, and I have no problem examining you from head to toe and coming up with the proper diagnosis to cure whatever ails you. So bid your highest and best for me, because after your visit, I promise you'll feel much better," he said, and smiled right at me. As they had been doing all night, the crowd went wild. I sat up and got ready for the bidding war that I knew was about to take place. The same woman seated beside Paris, who had lost the bid for Victor, screamed out,
$600!
$650!
I yelled.
Paris looked at me.
Yes, bitch! Get his fine ass!
$750!
Another woman yelled from the other side.
$1,000!
I countered.
$1,050!
The lady beside Paris winked at me. I winked back at her and said,
$2,000!
Then I looked at Dennis, who seemed impressed.
$3,000!
A woman yelled from behind us.
Oh! The crowd reacted in unison.
The woman behind Paris sat back in her seat, letting us know that the doctor was out of her budget. Hell, $3,000 for some dick was out of my budget, too, I thought. Paris looked at me and gave me a nod.
Get your man, cuz. You can afford him.
I figured that was her way of letting me know that if I was a few dollars short, she would have my back. So I said,
$3,500.
Damn, Dennis, they really want that checkup. I have $3,500. Do I hear four? Anyone? Anyone? Going once? Going twice?
No one said anything, so I stood up and got ready to head toward the stage to claim my prize.
$5,000!
I froze for a second. Then I slowly turned to see who was bidding. The woman was in the shadows in the back, but she finally stepped into the light for all to see. I stared at the bidder. She smiled at me and waved.
Oh, shit. Is that?
Paris mumbled. Yes, it is, I snapped. That's my mother.
$5,000,
the hostess repeated.
$5,000 going once, going twice.
It felt like all eyes were on me as I sat down in anger and defeat.
Sold to the lady in the back for $5,000.
The sound of applause that erupted was deafening, and I refused to stay and watch in humiliation as she claimed the prize that was supposed to be mine. I grabbed my purse and headed toward the exit.
Sasha, wait!
Paris tried to grab my arm, but I snatched away from her and kept going. I wanted to leave, but Paris was driving, which meant I had to wait for her ass. I paced angrily in the lobby while Paris took her sweet time.
Sasha? What the hell do you want?
I turned around and yelled at my mother.
Aren't you supposed to be on stage?
Don't act like this, Sasha.
Donna walked toward me, and I took a step back.
Leave me the fuck alone,
I yelled, causing the other folks in the lobby to stare.
You're causing a scene, and I know you were raised better than this, she said. How the fuck would you know? You didn't care enough to stick around to see how I was raised,
I spat. Our eyes locked, and I could see that my words had hurt her, causing me to feel slightly vindicated. She walked away without saying anything else.
Sasha, you okay?
Paris asked as she came walking up.
Yeah, I'm fine. I can't believe she did that. I hate her, I said.
Why are you so mad? It's a charity auction. If you want his ass that bad, all you gotta do is ask for his number.
He was checking your ass out just as hard as you were checking him,
Paris said.
Look at it this way. You and your cougar-ass mother have the same taste in men.
Fuck you, Paris.
It's not about him. How would you feel if Aunt Chippy was in here bidding on Bilal's Chef Boyardee ass?
Paris blinked for a second and then said,
I'd kick her fucking ass, that's what I'd do. My mom's in her 60s.
Exactly, and so is mine. So you should understand why I want to kick her ass right now, I replied.
We walked toward the exit, and as we passed a doorway leading into the hall, I saw my mother and Dennis laughing and talking. I realized that my feelings were deeper than what I'd admitted to Paris. I wanted to kick my mother's ass each and every time I saw her.
Ruby, 28. Although it was Sunday, the church was fairly empty when I entered. I knew it would be because I'd picked a time late in the evening when all the so-called saints would be home enjoying dinner after a long day of praising and singing. It was a small church, the same one my mother had dragged my brother Randy and me to each and every Sunday. As I walked into the sanctuary, I felt as if I had walked into a time warp. Everything was the same, including the sense of peace I felt when I looked at the large gold cross hanging on the wall behind the pulpit. I smiled at the sight of the wooden pews we would squirm in as we endured the long, drawn-out services each week. The back of the pews held the same red hymnals and tattered Bibles. I sat at the end of the front pew. Praying had become unfamiliar and uncomfortable to me, which was why I had decided that if I went back to the place where I first learned to pray, maybe it would help. I had been up for 3 nights, tossing and turning, unable to sleep because of the dreams I was having. I needed help before I went crazy, and I knew the only one who could help me was God. I closed my eyes and tried to focus. "Please, help me, Lord," I whispered, then began, "Our Father, who..."
"Ruby?"
I opened my eyes, startled by the sound of a woman. My heart pounded, and I quickly stood up.
"Ruby, is that you, gal?"
The large woman dressed in all white smiled at me, and I instantly recognized her.
"Mother Dubois," I said. "You looking good? Still beautiful. How's your brother Randy?"
she asked, sitting on the pew and pulling me down beside her.
"He was such a good boy to your mother, God rest her."
I looked down sadly as I thought about Randy.
"He's dead, Mother Dubois. Randy died 3 years ago."
"My God." Mother Dubois made the sign of the cross over her body and clutched the crucifix she wore round her neck.
"Did a white man kill him? I had a dream about him being killed by a white man."
I shook my head.
"No, he wasn't killed by a white man."
"Okay, not all me dreams is true."
Mother Dubois left the uncomfortable subject and turned her attention back to me.
"So, what brings ya here in the chapel this late in the day? I can see that you're troubled in your heart, Ruby."
"Peace." I sat back and looked down at the floor.
"I just needed to come here and see if I could find some peace of mind."
"This is the place for that. You've come to the right place, all right."
"But why is your spirit so vexed? You're pretty, but you look tired."
She took hold of my hand.
I'm very tired. I don't sleep as of late."
"That's not good. What keep you up, child?"
"It's funny you talked about dreams. I keep dreaming about my son's father. Very intimate dreams."
"Why is that a bad thing?"
she smiled, looking down at my hand as she said.
"I see that ring on your finger, so you must be married."
"I am, but that's the problem. The man I'm married to is not my son's father."
I lowered my head.
"Oh, I can see how that can be troubling,"
Mother Dubois nodded, and her kind voice lacked any hint of judgment against me.
"You still have feelings for the father of your son?"
I hesitated, then frowned.
"No, I love my husband."
"I did not say you did not love your husband. I said you have feelings for the father.
That is why you cannot stop him from coming to you in your sleep. Tell me, is someone bringing harm to him in these dreams?"
I tried to recall exactly what had been happening in the dreams I had. In most of them, it was Orlando and I being intimate. Then a white bird would come down and attack us, causing us to separate and run away. I would call for my son Vincent, but he would run after Orlando, and I couldn't catch either one of them. And finally, the bird would catch me in its talons. I would wake up in a cold sweat and run into my son's room, making sure he was safe. Then I would climb into bed with him, holding him until it was time to wake up.
"My son chases after his father, and I chase after both of them, but I can't catch him,"
I said, leaving out the part about the bird.
"Maybe you are chasing after the love you both have for this man," Mother Dubois suggested.
"No, my son has never met his father," I said.
"Never? Why not?"
She looked appalled.
"Because his father is the man who killed my brother, which is why I can never love him."
"Ruby," she said, her eyes wide with surprise,
"you are still thinking about him after all of that?
That means you still love this man."
I sat and listened to Mother Dubois as she told me something that deep down I already knew.
London, 29. The small charter plane we were riding in landed with a bump. It had taken less than 30 minutes for us to arrive. There was no conversation between us during that ride, and I told myself it was because of everything that had taken place over the past 24 hours, and not because of the kiss that neither Daryl nor I had yet mentioned. As soon as we had returned to the house after the explosion, Daryl had gone crazy on our captive, who finally told us that Vinny and Ruby were in Kingston, which was where we'd just landed. I had spent most of the night wrestling with the idea that Daryl was going to knock on my door, and what I would or wouldn't do when he did. Only he didn't. I honestly didn't know how I felt about that, and with Rio all up in our faces, we really hadn't had a moment alone to discuss it. As we taxied on the runway toward the small terminal, I glanced over at Daryl, and he smiled. I smiled back, remembering the feel of his lips on mine and the warmth of his arms as he held me in front of that house. We needed to talk, but I knew this wasn't the time. Would there ever be a right time? Should I even be thinking about finding a right time to talk, especially since my husband had already called demanding that I come home? I probably should have been more concerned with that, but I wasn't. My mind was all over the place, not only with the thoughts of Daryl. There was also the fact that our men were at least 3 hours' drive away, and we had no idea how we were going to find Vinny, Ruby, or my nephew. When the plane finally stopped, I unfastened my seatbelt and stood up. There was another jolt when the door opened, and I instinctively grabbed Daryl's arm to steady myself. Again, our eyes met, until he looked away. "I'll go find a cab," he said as soon as we stepped off the plane. "We'll meet you out front," Rio told him, and then turned to me. "What the hell is going on? Why is he acting so strange all of a sudden? Did you fuck him?" I did my best impression of being offended by his assumption. "No, I didn't fuck him. I'm married, or did you forget that?" I held up the Marquise diamond on my left hand. "Don't act like I'm stupid. What happens in Jamaica stays in Jamaica, remember? Your words." "I do remember, and I'm gonna need to hold you to that, okay?" I gave him a don't play with me look. "And just so you know, we did have a moment, but that was it. Just a moment, nothing else. So anything you think or think you're thinking stays right here on this island, you hear? I don't want anything misconstrued when we get home." "I got you. But whatever is going on, y'all need to get it together, because both of y'all are acting weird as fuck, and I don't like it. It could get one of us killed." He picked up one of the suitcases as if there was no more to say. "Oh, fuck," Rio gasped. "Please don't start with that again," I warned, thinking he was about to start ranting about the weight of my luggage. Then I turned to see him staring at something, and I asked, "What is it, Rio?" "Look." He leaned over to me and whispered, "Over there, getting into that car."
"Look at what? Where?"
"There," Rio pointed emphatically.
"There, over there, London."
"Oh, fuck." I repeated his words because I couldn't find any of my own. I literally couldn't believe my eyes. "Am I seeing things?"
"Not if you're seeing Curtis and Kenny,"
Rio snapped back. I grabbed him by the wrist and headed for the door.
"Come on, we gotta find Daryl."
We stepped outside, and I looked around for Daryl. He was a little farther down the walkway on the phone. Rio whistled loudly and waved wildly until Daryl noticed him. Meanwhile, I approached a van that had been sitting in front of the airport and spoke to the driver. "I got $100 US if you can give us a ride and follow that car," I told him.
"Yes, yes, get in," the man said without hesitation. "My brother can wait."
Rio and I quickly threw our bags into the van and climbed in the back seat.
"What the heck is going on?" Daryl asked, climbing into the front seat.
"My cousin Curtis and Kenny are in that car." I pointed to the black Mercedes that was half a block ahead of us.
"Whatever you do, do not let that car out of your sight," Daryl said to the driver.
"No worries, man. I'm a good driver."
The man smiled as he sped up behind the Benz. True to his word, The driver continued following the car through the streets of Kingston until it pulled in front of a downtown apartment building.
"Stay right here," Daryl told the driver. "Don't turn. Just pull over."
The driver obliged and eased over. We watched as the doors to the Benz opened and Curtis and Kenny got out carrying a large army duffel bag. As confusing as this whole scenario was, the coup de grace was when the sliding glass doors to the building opened and Uncle Larry walked out.
Curtis, 30. The car pulled in front of a high-rise apartment building, and I was happy to get out and stretch my legs. I was tired as hell, and from the looks of him, so was Kenny. It felt like we'd been sitting forever between driving to Maryland from Georgia last night and the flight over here. There was one good thing about it, though. It was good to see my old man. It had only been a few days, but I missed his eccentric ass. "Hey, Dad," I said happily when he walked out through the sliding glass doors. "What the hell took you so long?" He hugged Kenny, then me. "You guys left 6 hours ago." "We weren't exactly in a Learjet," I joked. "Where'd you find that bush pilot anyway? He was high the entire ride over here. He's one of Jamaica John's people." "Well, that answers the question," Kenny said. "It does, doesn't it? But at least you're here in one piece. Come on in. We got shit to do. You got the bag?" Dad asked. I held up the duffel bag full of money that I had been holding onto for dear life since I dug it up. "Yes, sir, right here." "Good. The sooner I pay Vinny and get home, the better," he said. "Home? We just got here," Kenny said with a frown. Like me, he was hoping for a few days of fun in the sun. "This ain't no fucking vacation, boy. We gotta get back and get shit done. From what I'm hearing from Vinny, LC has a price on our heads. We have to hit them before they hit us. Speaking of hitting us, I think there's something you should know," Kenny told him. "What?" My dad looked past me to my brother, who was standing on the other side of me. I frowned, hoping he wasn't about to say what I thought he was. We talked about it during the ride to Maryland. "Come on, Kenny, spit it out," Dad yelled at him. Kenny sighed. "While we were digging the bag up, Paris and Orlando showed up at the farm." "What? How the fuck did y'all let that happen? I told you to go at night so no one would see you," Dad snapped. I closed my eyes and shook my head. I had warned my brother that telling Dad wasn't a good idea, but he thought he knew better than me. "We did go at night," Kenny replied. "How the fuck did they even know y'all were in Waycross? Who the fuck did you tell? Or fuck?" Dad turned around and directed questions at me. "We didn't tell anyone, Dad, I swear." I raised my hands as if I was surrendering. I cut my eyes at Kenny, who now looked at me as if this was somehow my fault. "We did everything the way you told us to." "Well, you're here and they ain't, so I guess we got two less of LC's brats to worry about." "You did kill them, didn't you?" Kenny's shoulders slumped as he admitted.
"No, Dad, we didn't kill them."
The old man's head snapped back so fast I thought he might have given himself whiplash. "What do you mean they're not dead?" He grabbed Kenny by the throat, not caring who saw or heard him. "I told you if you saw any of those little fuckers to kill him. Why the fuck aren't they dead?" I had to give my brother props for his bravery. He didn't even try to resist. By now, I was standing next to Dad trying to pry his fingers from around Kenny's neck. "We were about to kill them, and Dad, and what?" He tightened his grip. "We didn't have to. Mama dealt with them. She pulled a shotgun on them and everything," I told him, hoping it would be enough to bring him to his senses before he killed my little brother.
"Your mama?"
Dad's voice softened slightly, and his eyes widened. Finally, he let go of Kenny's throat. "Yeah," Kenny sputtered, rubbing his neck. "She pulled a shotgun on them." "She always did love shotguns. It's been her preferred weapon since we were kids." To my surprise, his body relaxed and he smiled. "That damn Nene. I swear I love that woman." "We know that," I told him. "What the fuck y'all looking at?" Dad shouted when he realized we were being watched by everyone outside the building. Most of them went about their business once he yelled at them. "Come on, boys. I got someone I'd like to introduce you to," he said, like he hadn't just almost choked the life out of Kenny. "We'll be back in a little while. Go wait in the parking lot," Dad told the driver, who responded wordlessly with a nod. We walked past the reception area and rode the elevator to the top floor. When the doors opened, there was an armed man waiting in front of a door. I'm here to see Vinny. He's expecting me, Dad told the guy. What's your name? He asked me and went to frisk my father. Don't put your hands on me! Dad pushed him away and the man reached for his piece. Before he could unholster it, all three of us had our guns aimed at him. Whoa! What the fuck is going on here? The door was opened by a white guy. I told this motherfucker you were expecting us and he tried to manhandle me, Vinny, Dad said, his gun still pointed. Come on now, Leviticus, man. Is there any way to treat our guests? You know better. Come on back, Larry. Vinny Dash opened the door wide and welcomed us inside. His apartment was a fully furnished man cave with a pool table, fully stocked bar area, and even a jacuzzi in one corner. Rap music played through the surround sound speakers, and there were a couple of guys playing Madden on one plasma TV, while porn played on another. We followed him to another open living area with a black leather sofa, oversized chair, and a coffee table, which had the biggest pile of marijuana I had ever seen, sitting in the center. Nice place, Vinny, Dad said. Thanks. This is my corporate office, Vinny laughed. Isn't that what it's called in the business world? I ain't never seen no corporate office like this, I mumbled, taking it all in. The only thing missing is some naked strippers up in here, Kenny said, laughing as he looked around. It's a little early for them, but stick around for another hour or two and they'll be here, Vinny assured us. Dad introduced us. Vinny, these are my boys, Kurt and Kenny. Boys, this is our new business associate, Vinny Dash. Nice to meet you fellas. Sit down, sit down. Y'all want a drink? Some smoke? Vinny asked, sitting on the oversized chair. Dad sat on the sofa and we remained standing. We knew not to sit down unless instructed by our father. No, we're good. Dad declined his offer, although I could have used a good hit. Let's get down to the business at hand. You got the dope? Dad asked Vinny. Vinny nodded. It's waiting to be transported to the plane when you leave. You got my money? Dad looked over at me and said, pay the man. I placed the bag on the floor and took out 3/4 of the cash, placing it on the table next to the weed. Vinny picked up one of the bundles and flipped through it, then called for one of the men playing the video games to come and get it. When are you heading back? Vinny asked. Today, Dad told him. Why so soon? I thought you'd hang around to celebrate. There's going to be plenty of ass, and these Jamaicans love some American dick. Or at least the dick they think can get them to America, Kenny joked, and Vinny laughed along with him. I looked over at Kenny. I knew he was hoping that Vinny would somehow convince our dad to stay so we could enjoy this shit. It's the same thing I was hoping. Come on, Larry, have a little fun, Vinny prodded. Sorry, I'm flying back with the product. The sooner I get back, the sooner I can get this shit done. You want me to be a return customer, don't you, Vinny? Indeed I do. And I gotta tell you, Larry, doing business with you has certainly been a pleasure for me, and I appreciate it. Anything you need, you got it. Jamaica John and his people are at your disposal, and you may utilize him wherever he can be helpful, Vinny told him. I appreciate that, Dad said. No problem. But I gotta ask you a question, though. What's that? How exactly are you going to use that dope to put your brother out of business? I listened closely because I'd been wondering the same thing. Dad stood up with a big smile on his face. I'm going to give it away. Vinny looked at him like he was crazy. Did you say give it away? Well, something like that. Vinny walked us back through the fun-filled office space and out the same door we'd entered. When we got into the hallway, the same guy was there. Leviticus, apologize to my friend and his sons for giving them a hard time, Vinny commanded him. But I was just doing my job, boss. You told me... The shot seemed to come from nowhere, and it hit Leviticus right in the forehead, leaving a small hole. My heart began racing, and I reached for my weapon, prepared to retaliate, until I heard laughter. I turned around and saw it was Vinny who was laughing. Somebody clean this mess up, he shouted. What the fuck? Dad hissed. Oh, yeah, Larry... I'm a little crazy myself, Vinny smiled wickedly. Come on, I'll walk you guys out. I can use some fresh air. We didn't waste any time getting on the elevator to exit the building.
Vegas, 31.
What's going on?
Pop asked as he entered the den, followed by Harris and Nevada. I'd sent my son to find his grandfather because things had just gone from bad to worse. Take a look for yourself. I motioned toward the big screen hanging on the wall, then pressed a button on my phone. The video I had received began to play. and I could see from the hardened look of disbelief on my father's face that we were in trouble. Shit just got complicated.
That's an understatement, he said.
That right there is the work of the devil himself, Orlando added angrily. He and Junior were sitting on the sofa and had already seen the clip of Uncle Larry, Kenny, and Curtis in front of some tall building, all hugged up and laughing like they were best friends with Vinny Dash.
Play that video again, Pop said,
easing into a chair.
Do we know what the hell they were doing together?
Nope. But if I had to guess, it looks like they formed some kind of alliance.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend, Pop muttered,
leaning forward to see the video closer.
That was one of Larry's favorite sayings.
I remember that, Junior replied. Uncle Larry used to always say stuff like that to Curtis.
Words to live by, Larry used to call him.
Pop exhaled, running his hand through his hair. His frustration was written all over his face.
Despite his mental issues, that brother of mine is one who practices what he preaches.
So what do we do now, Pop? Junior asked.
Why don't we just take them all out now?
Give our guys the kill order, Orlando said. I wouldn't lose any sleep over Vinny's death, I can assure you that.
No can do on that, little brother.
Our people ran up on them purely by accident and without support. If they had made a move, it would have been akin to a suicide mission, I replied, playing the video game.
We sure as hell don't want that. Where are they now?
Pop asked. They split up pretty fast after their love fest. Our people are following them. We should be getting reports in the next 10-15 minutes.
So who took this video? That was some pretty quick thinking,
Pop commented. Yeah. It was, I replied, studying the images. Rio really came through on this one.
Rio?
Harris spoke for the first time, stepping in front of the television and blocking our view.
Rio is in Jamaica with London.
We are well aware of that, Harris, I said.
Obviously you're not, because my wife is still there. And now you're telling me these fucking psychos are there too. If they spot her, she's dead. That son of a bitch Larry is insane. Now what's the plan to get her the fuck out?
Harris stepped up boldly, getting in my face. His reaction was exactly why I had tried to stay away from mentioning the names of our team with him in the room. He was already pissed that London was in proximity to danger. I didn't need him to be reminded that she was there with Daryl Graham. Harris was the most jealous dude I'd ever seen.
Calm down, Harris. London's gonna be fine.
I tried in vain to reassure him. He pointed an accusatory finger in my face.
Easy for you to say. It's not your wife out there stalking a stone-cold killer.
He looked over at Orlando in an attempt to drag him into this bullshit, then looked back at me.
Or your son we're trying to rescue.
My brother-in-law had a way of pushing people's buttons. I don't think it was intentional. It was simply that he was an asshole. There was no denying that. Why London had married him was one of the biggest mysteries of the Duncan family. But as much of an asshole as Harris was, he was also smart, meticulous, and a damn good lawyer. All qualities that the family had benefited from many times. I glanced over at Pop, hoping for a sign that he'd be okay with me knocking Harris's ass out. But he, in turn, glanced toward Nevada, reminding me that my son was in the room. So I decided not to punch Harris in the face, for the time being.
No, it's my sister, my brother, and my nephew, you prick. Now get that finger out of my face before I break it.
I shoved him backward.
Vegas, your phone, Junior said.
I ignored Harris for a second and answered the FaceTime call. Rio appeared on the screen.
What up, Ree? We got you on the big screen. Pop, Orlando, Junior, and Harris are here.
I held up my phone so he could see everybody.
Can you hear me?
Rio asked.
Barely, I said. There's a lot of wind noise in the background. Yeah, I'm at the airport. Uncle Larry, Curtis, and Kenny just left. Left? Where the hell did they go? Pop shouted, standing up. The flight manifesto for the charter plane says they're headed to Farmingdale, Rio yelled over the background noise. I'm getting ready to hop on a plane there now. Farmingdale? Out on Long Island? I asked. Yeah, Rio replied. Look, I gotta go. Have y'all heard from London? No, not yet, but they should be checking in soon. Well, tell her I'm okay. I'm getting on this Learjet, and I guarantee we'll land before that piece of crap Uncle Larry and the boys just got on. I'll see you in a few hours. As soon as Rio hung up, Harris started flipping out. What the fuck did he mean, have you heard from London? Why isn't she with him? Not now, Harris, just calm the fuck down. Junior yelled, then looked at our father. So what's our next move, Pop? He asked. Pop looked stressed. Well, boys, I guess we better break out the welcoming committee. Looks like we're about to have a family reunion.
London, 32. 1 hour earlier. Uncle Larry and his boys had only been in the building about 15 minutes before they walked out, followed by Vinnie Dash, of all people. I was so surprised by Vinnie's appearance, I could barely talk, let alone move. Thank God Rio had the foresight to pull out his phone and start recording, because I was there and I still couldn't believe what I was seeing, so I knew the folks back home would have a hard time believing it. Rio, send that video to Vegas right now, Daryl ordered intensely. He kept looking at Rio and me, and then at my uncle and Vinnie. Finally, he shook his head and exhaled, mumbling to himself, Nah, it's not worth the risk. To tell the truth, I was a little offended. If we were Vegas and Junior or Paris and Sasha, you'd try to take them, wouldn't you? I snapped. Maybe, but you're not, so there's no sense in thinking about it. Just because there's opportunity doesn't mean you should take it. I can fight, Daryl, and so can Rio, I told him. This is not about fighting, London. This is about the odds being stacked against us. 6-on-3 is not great, I agreed, but we have the element of surprise on our side. He pointed to the top of the building, where I hadn't noticed two men standing, then at two cars, parked but still occupied, that I had also missed. There's almost a dozen men outside of the six you're looking at in the parking lot. How many are hostile? I don't know, I replied, feeling stupid all of a sudden. Neither do I, so why take a chance? He began texting somebody on his phone. Rio, there's a cab right up the street. Go get in it. What? Why me? Rio protested. Because your uncle and cousins are headed to the parking lot, and Vinny and his entourage are heading back inside. He put down his phone and stared at Rio. And because even Miss Chippy wouldn't recognize you with that purple hair. True. Rio smirked as he reached for the door. Rio, Daryl said, stopping him before he got out of the van. Whatever you do, stay out of sight and don't take any risks. Okay, gotta go. He kissed me on the cheek, then hopped out of the van and crossed the street. Rio got into the cab just as the Mercedes that had delivered Uncle Larry and the boys to this spot eased out of the parking lot. I held my breath, hoping my brother would be able to catch up to them. We'd been lucky to find a fast driver from the airport, but would that be the case a second time? I was finally able to breathe when I saw the cab pass by with only one car between them and the bends. Rio waved at us from the back seat. So, now what do we do? I asked. We wait, Daryl told me. How long is that gonna be? Our impromptu van driver looked worried. Things had been so intense that I'd almost forgotten he was there. Daryl reached into his pocket and handed him another $100 bill. As long as it takes. You'll get one of these every hour. The driver took the money and wiped the frown off his face.
No problem.
About an hour and a half later, Vinny and five other men came out of the building and got into three different vehicles.
Follow that car.
Daryl pointed to the yellow Lamborghini that Vinny and another man were in, which was being followed by the other two cars. The driver immediately got behind them and tried to keep up, but it wasn't easy because Vinny was flying. Soon, I realized that our surroundings had begun to change. We were no longer in the vibrant, busy downtown of Kingston. Instead, we were approaching a dilapidated urban area. When we got to a busy intersection, the driver pulled over. "What are you doing?" I asked in a panic as I watched the Lamborghini and other cars continue down the street. "You're letting him get away." The driver turned to Daryl and said,
"This is as far as I can take you. I can't go no further. Tivoli Gardens is the most dangerous part of West Kingston, and I value my life. I don't know who that white man is, but if he traveling somewhere in there, then he is a very bad man. White men are not welcome in that area, especially ones with fancy cars. You are not familiar in these parts, and someone will see you, and you will not make it back out."
"What if I give you $1,000 U.S.?" Daryl asked. He shook his head.
"Can't spend it if I'm dead."
Daryl nodded as if he understood what the man was saying.
"Is there a hotel near that building we came from?"
"There is one not far from there, but it is not a fancy hotel. It is more like a motel," the driver told him.
"Take us there."
"I'm not staying in some beat-up motel," I objected.
"London, don't start."
The look Daryl gave me made me feel ashamed.
"Now is not the time for us to be checking into the Four Seasons. You're starting to sound like your sister Paris."
"Fine," I relented. "This is my nephew we're talking about."
"Take us to the place,"
Daryl told the driver. Then he dialed Vegas's phone to tell him what was going on.
Ruby, 33. Vincent and I had just finished eating lunch, and I was clearing the table when I heard the front door open. For a second, I was about to lose my mind on one of the men for not knocking, until I realized it was my husband. I hadn't expected him home, especially in the middle of the day.
"There's my beautiful wife and my son," he announced happily as he walked into the kitchen.
"Hi, Daddy." Vincent jumped up from the table and ran over to hug him.
"And what are you doing home so early?" I said, wiping my hands on a dish towel. "I came home to kiss my wife."
Vinny lifted me off the ground and spun me until I was dizzy.
"Vinny, if you don't put me down, so help me, I'll beat you with a broom," I said, playfully slapping his shoulder.
He laughed as he lowered me to the floor.
"What has gotten into you?"
I asked, enjoying this lighter side of Vinny that I didn't get to see very often.
"I have a surprise for you," he told me.
"A surprise? What kind of surprise?" I asked. Vincent jumped up and down excitedly.
"I want a surprise, Daddy. Do you have a surprise for me, too?"
"Vincent, stop jumping in the house. Let your father talk," I said.
"Yes, I have a surprise for you, too."
Vinny kissed him, then reached into a bag he was carrying and handed him a toy robot.
"A transformer!"
Vincent beamed, showing it to me.
"You spoil him too much,"
I scolded, though I secretly loved the fact that he did.
"He deserves it, and so do you."
"Do I?
So, what's my surprise? Tell me,"
I said, feeling butterflies in my stomach. He was more excited than I had ever seen him, and it was kind of contagious.
"I can show you better than I can tell you." "All right, then, show me."
I held my hand out for him to place whatever it was into my palm.
"You're going to need more hands," he said with a laugh, then dumped the contents of his bag onto the table.
I couldn't believe how much American money was piled up. I looked around, paranoid that one of his henchmen might see it.
"It's for you," he told me, "to buy a new house back in the States in a few months."
Vinny, where'd you get all this money?
Despite my curiosity about the origins of the money, I couldn't wipe the smile off my face at the thought of returning to the U.S. Larry Duncan gave it to me, Vinny said. Well, that was enough to wipe away my smile. My heart dropped.
Aren't the Duncans the bad people, Daddy?
Vincent sounded frightened.
They want to kill us, remember?
Vinny patted our son on the head to reassure him. Not this Duncan, sport. This Duncan is going to make us rich and kill all the other Duncans for us. I looked over at my son. He looked relieved, but I sure didn't feel the same way.
Vincent, take your transformer and go outside and play while Daddy and I talk. But, Mummy, I want to hear Daddy's story about the Duncans being killed.
He sounded disappointed.
That's not talk for little boys.
I walked over to the door that led to the backyard.
I'll come and get you when it's time for us to go get ice cream.
Hearing that he would be getting ice cream was enough motivation for him to run out the back door without having to be told twice. Once we were alone, I went back to the conversation my husband had started.
Vinny, are you crazy? We talked about this, I told him. Why would you meet with him? That man is not the answer to your prayers. He's a Duncan.
Oh, but you're wrong there. He pulled me into his arms and planted a kiss on the top of my head.
This is an opportunity that I couldn't pass up. Larry Duncan is just as hell-bent on getting rid of Elsie and his family as we are. Ruby, he's taking care of them for us. They aren't even gonna be thinking about you, me, or Vincent, because they're gonna have too much other shit to deal with.
I shook my head nervously.
I don't trust him, Vinny, and neither should you. How do you know this not some kind of setup? It's not, baby.
He picked up one of the rolls of money. Besides, he just gave us a million reasons to trust him.
You don't know that, Vinny. He may be planning to kill both of us right now and take my son.
I started to panic and pace the floor.
The Duncans are rich. This money means nothing to them.
Ruby, calm down. It's not a setup, and he's not gonna try anything. I made sure of that, Vinny told me.
How?
He knows I'm just as crazy as he is. I killed a motherfucker right there in front of him and his sons. For no reason other than to prove a point. Shot him. Right in the head. Vinny's laugh was so sinister that I was almost afraid of him. I knew there had to be some loss of life in the line of work my husband was in. I had learned that from my brother. But to hear him laugh about shooting a man in cold blood for sport wasn't something that sat well with me. I had to wonder if I truly knew the man I had married.
Vegas, 34. An hour after Rio landed, we were in an SUV parked on the far side of the airfield, which provided us with a front row seat to see whatever was about to go down. We scoped out the location with binoculars and set our walkie-talkies on the same channel as the DEA and police teams that were waiting next to the runway. I'd had Junior make a few calls to our friends in law enforcement, who we kept on the payroll for moments like this. In addition to them, we also had our own people and plan in place. I talked to some folks up in the tower, and the plane is supposed to land in about 10 minutes, Junior said, opening the door and climbing in where Paris, my dad, and I were already positioned. Is everyone in place? I asked. Yeah, Orlando and Sasha are at the terminal. And the rest of our people? I questioned. It wasn't that I didn't trust Junior, but we just couldn't fuck this up. We have one of our people at every exit and major intersection within a 3-mile radius. They're ready, Junior assured me. You tell them what I said? Pop asked. He had been very specific with his instructions. He wasn't taking any chances. I did. But you sure about this? Junior asked. Yes,
I'm sure. Pop answered. What makes you think I'm not? I answered for both of us, because Junior and I shared the same concerns. He is your brother, and they are your nephews. We just want to make sure, that's all, Pop. Uncle Larry wasn't thinking about none of that shit when he shot Daddy. Fuck him. Take his ass out and his whack-ass sons, too. Shit. They damn sure weren't worried about our being family when they pulled their guns out on us down in Waycross. Paris interjected with her usual take-no-prisoners attitude.
Paris makes a good point. If they give you any resistance or reason, take them out.
Pop said without hesitation.
All right, Pop, don't worry. If the feds don't get them, one of our people will.
I clamped a firm hand on my dad's shoulder. Although he was cool and calm, I knew this was hard for him, and I wanted him to know we had his back. The sound of aircraft caused me to grab my binoculars and aim them at the sky. Sure enough, a small plane was approaching the tiny runway. It landed with a bounce, and before it even came to a complete stop, at least a dozen vans and unmarked cars rushed toward it, blocking its path. Officers armed with guns, wearing helmets and bulletproof vests, jumped out of the vehicles. We all watched as the door to the plane opened and a tall, skinny guy climbed out with his hands up. Within seconds, they had him on the ground. We waited for my uncle and cousins to follow suit, but they didn't. "You, in the plane, come out with your hands up," a voice yelled through a loudspeaker.
"Where the fuck are they?"
Paris hissed.
"They're not going down without a fight. I know my brother. He's not giving up that easy. If at all,"
Pop told her. After a 20-minute standoff, the cops took position around the plane, throwing tear gas into the opening the pilot had exited. They waited a few more minutes, but still, no one exited, so they stormed the plane. "No shots," I said, pressing the binoculars against my eyes. "Why the fuck don't I hear any shots?" "Silences, maybe?" Junior asked.
"No. Maybe Larry and the boys, but I didn't see any of those cops with silencers."
The next thing we saw were bales of marijuana being tossed out the back of the plane, one by one.
"Damn. That's a lot of weed for such a little-ass plane,"
Paris commented as the five officers who had stormed the plane exited. With still no sign of Uncle Larry, Curtis, or Kenny.
"What the fuck is going on? Where the hell are they?"
I asked.
"Should know in a second. That's Captain Wilcox calling me now."
Junior put the call on speaker so we could all listen.
"Hello? This is Captain Wilcox.
Junior didn't let the man finish his sentence.
"I don't have time for pleasantries, Captain. Did you get them?"
"We got almost 30 bales of marijuana and the pilot, but your uncle and his sons weren't on the plane."
"Captain, this is L.C. Duncan. What do you mean they weren't on the plane?"
Pop cut in, moving closer to the phone.
"They were on the damn thing when it took off. The pilot said he stopped in Maryland to refuel.
And that's where they got out, Mr. Duncan," the captain replied.
"I'll give your son a chance to interrogate him if you'd like, but that's about all I can do."
Pop let out a frustrated sigh.
"Thank you, Captain. I think we'll take you up on that. My sons will be in touch," he said.
And then Junior ended the call.
"What do we do now?" Paris asked. "We wait until my brother makes his next move. And if I know him, it won't take very long."
Pop sat back in his seat.
"Vegas, you and Junior go see this pilot. I want to know everything he knows about Larry, Vinny, or anybody else involved with them. My brother may have given us the slip this time, but as your grandmother used to say, I've always been the smartest one of her boys."
Larry, 35. "This makes no sense whatsoever. We could be in New York by now instead of on the Jersey Turnpike," Kenny complained from the back seat. I don't understand why we got off the plane. First of all, I done told you about questioning what I do. Secondly, who said I didn't have business in Jersey? I replied, handing my cell phone to Curtis so he could read a text message I just received. I've been in this business.